What's going on inside our mind, Stephanie?
Well, everybody's different, aren't they? So a lot of the times, I think, in our mind, we're on kind of autopilot. They say that we have 50 to 60,000 thoughts a day, and 95% of those are the same ones we had yesterday. So if your mind's running 100 miles an hour doing the same things that you did yesterday, because you need thinking to do things, then there's not a lot of room for new thought. And so, but thinking, the way that we think affects our physiology, you know, our body, and also affects our behaviour, what we do, and affects our emotions and feelings. So the things are all kind of linked together, and then, you know, resulting from that is our behaviour, which affects what we do in life, what we achieve, if you like. And I'm not talking necessarily about, you know, running a marathon. I'm just talking about what we actually do in life. It's all run by our thoughts.
So it's hard to break a habit if we're not changing our thinking.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And so sometimes we're not aware of these programs that we've got running, which is the programming in neuro-linguistic programming. We've just got programs that we've either set up by parents or teachers or whatever, or that we've established ourselves because at one point they were useful, but then, you know, as we get older, they might be not that useful, but we might be still doing them because we're on autopilot and not using rational thought to think, well, is this actually quite useful, or is it just something I used to do when I was three and I'm still doing it and it's not that useful anymore, you know?
I find it
hard. Some people still have tantrums, you know? Or sulk or things like that. It's like, well, that might have been useful when you were five, but is it useful now?
But Stephanie, you've got to understand that's the other person's fault.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what we were talking about before, is that people blame other people for their... So I'll say
that they did that thing that annoyed me and then I got angry.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's interesting, that is, because I go, well, who do you blame when you're really happy? Because I don't, you know, it's only negative feelings that we blame other people for. If you're feeling really happy, we don't usually blame anybody. We go, oh, I feel really happy. It's because I did this or that, or because, you know, I don't know, the sun's shining or whatever it is, you know. So we're not blaming other people, but when we're angry or pissed off or sad, it's somebody else's fault, you know. So we're not taking responsibility for our own emotions, which result from our thinking. Not from what's happening outside. It's our thinking about what we see, hear, and sometimes feel physically that results in how we feel. Because we perceive it differently.
There must be some times when you can blame the other person, though. Like if someone comes up to you and somebody verbally abusing you and like going nuts at you, that's pretty hard to maintain your equilibrium.
Well, yeah, exactly. But there'll always be somebody that could. So, and that's the thing, you see, is like, and that's where NLP came from. It went not from people that were abusive or were able to take it, but I looked at people and went, well, how come, you know, like, I don't know, 75% of the population behave this way in this circumstance and then the other 25% behave this way, which is much more useful. And so they studied the 25% and some of the others to figure out what the 25% we're doing differently.
Right.
How they're thinking about it differently, because it's our perception of what's happening, not what's actually happening, that triggers the emotion.
It's funny because a lot of study in psychology, I was reading this somewhere the other day, a lot as goes into something's gone wrong and analysing what's gone wrong and what caused it and getting to the bottom of it. These guys with NLP just said, let's see what's going right and if we can do that.
Yeah.
Which isn't just... It turns out to be a novel idea.
Well, it was a novel idea because this is like, what is it now, nearly 50 years ago that they developed these skills, I suppose you could call them now. And everybody else was looking at, you know, how come people manage to get themselves into mental institutions and, you know, couldn't function. And then they went, well, you know, everybody's studying that. Why don't we study people who are successful? Why don't we study people who have got over phobias? Why don't we... study people who have got over traumas, and why don't we study people who can spell as opposed to people that can't spell, and figure out how they do that, and then see if we can do it ourselves and then teach it to other people.
And they could?
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you about it.
Actually, I remember this great example you gave me of one of the guys when they were just starting out, they were filming a psychologist.
Virginia Satir, family therapist.
Family therapy. Mm. And the that Virginia Satir was trying to teach her students how to do family therapy.
Mm.
And she didn't quite understand what she was doing, but he was observing. And then he came in. He offered to say, can I have a go?
Yeah, he did.
And he did, and he did it better. But better than the students,
because
he'd worked out what she was doing.
Yeah.
So that was his skill, really, was observing.
Well, it's called modelling. And it's, you know, I've done a couple of modelling processes. I do modelling processes with people trying to figure out how they're creating the problem. But I've also done one with a bank. So I don't know whether I want to go into that right now. But anyway, what you have to do, it's quite an extensive process. So I have to figure out how people are thinking. So I'm using the eye accessing that we've talked about before, whether they're thinking visually, auditorily, or kinesthetically, or talking to themselves. I want to know how they're doing things. So I might be sitting there listening to them, or videoing them, or recording what they're saying. So what are the language that they're using? And all of these things to lead me to figure out how they're doing what they're doing. So, when I'm coaching people, I'm doing that to try and figure out how they're creating their problem. But in this case, it was a bank, and they were trying to figure out how come some of their banking consultants were exceptional, one in particular, and how come others were like average, mediocre. So this particular one, managed to get 300% of bonus every month. And so, they thought, well, she's really good. What is she doing? So I'll figure out that, and then I'll also model somebody that was kind of average. So sometimes they'd get they get the bonus and something, but only just get it, and then other times I wouldn't get it, to see what the differences were between the two. And it was really eye-opening because, they all knew that there was a bonus involved, but the woman that got 300% bonus, not interested in the bonus. Whereas the other one was totally focused on the bonus. She was just focused on doing the best she could for the customers, giving them what they needed. The guy that was there was giving them what they wanted, which I could see as an observer that they were going to get into trouble again in a few months' time. So there was and then value. So what was important in each circumstance? So they had very similar key words for the values, like teamwork, for example, was one that I have from memory. And for the guy that was kind of average, he teamwork for him meant having a laugh and a joke and a nice friendly atmosphere.
Yeah.
And for her, it was about still about friendliness, but it was about supporting each other. So they had completely different meanings for the words that they used,
this thing about wants and needs, the successful staff member was, I mean, you have to work out what people's needs are as opposed to their wants, don't you?
Because So what I was doing was observing them, recording them. And so this woman, one day I was there observing her, and a woman came in who was, she was maybe middle to late 20s, and she had a toddler. It was, about two or something, and he was crying and his nose was running, and he was a bit of a state. And she said to the banking consultant said to her, "Oh, how are you today? You don't look too good." And she said, "Oh, I've been up all night with him." That's the son. And the banking consultant said to her, Oh, that's no good. She says, "He doesn't look like he'd do that." Right. So he doesn't look like he'd do that. So that's eight words. She'd said, "He looks like he's a good kid."
Right. Which means you're probably a good mum as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, oh my God, this woman's amazing. She was amazing with language. She hadn't got a clue about NLP or anything, but she was just a natural. And then this woman said, I was at a funeral. And then this woman said, "Oh, was it so-and-so?" And she said, "Oh, that one and another one." So, again, the woman knew who it was and whether she'd been there or not. I don't know. So she built rapport immediately, And she said, "Well, how can I help?" And she said, "Oh, I need a loan." And she said, "Well, what do you need a loan for?" And she said, "Well, I need to buy a microwave and a dryer, because it was the middle of winter. It was like July or something. It was like the weather we've had here. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Not like today.
No, not like today. And the woman said, she said, oh, I need to buy a microwave and a dryer. And she says, so I need some money. I need to get a loan. And the banking consultant says, no, you don't need a loan. She says, remember we set up that savings plan a couple of years ago?
Mm.
She says, you've got more than enough in there to cover those. The woman was absolutely wrapped out of a tree because she'd just been coming out of her pay or whatever it was each week. She got like $2,000 in there or something.
She'd forgotten about it.
That she'd forgotten. But the woman, the banking consultant had given her what she needed at the time.
And I suppose a more opportunistic salesperson might have known that but sold them something else as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, for example, the guy who was – it was a nice guy. He had somebody there who was he got a jacket on with 10-pin bowling on it, you know. So it was pretty obvious that he liked 10-pin bowling, you know. And he never mentioned it. And he said to the guy, well, you know, what's the store? And he said, oh, I need a loan. And he said, well, how much do you want? And he said, oh, I want $30,000. And so he asked him a whole lot of questions like, how much do you spend on food a week? And the guy said $50. And I'm thinking, nobody spends $50. He's got to be spending more than that. It was him and his wife. And, you know, what do you do? You know, oh, well, we go away at the weekend. You know, we go to 10-pin bowling things. And, you know, we spend some money there, blah, blah, blah. And it was, to me, I mean, I'm no banker, but I could see that if he gave him the loan, he was going to be in the same situation in 3 or 4 months' time, you know.
Yeah.
But he gave him what he wanted.
Yeah.
But he also didn't have a clue about building rapport, so he had one of those long desks with like a bubble on the end, like a circle.
Yeah.
On the end,
yeah.
Where the customer sat, and his computer was at the other end, so the customer couldn't see the computer that he was trying to show him stuff on because he'd got glasses. And then also, I think they'd had a burglar or something, so they had a pedal that they pressed to open the doors when somebody was there, which again was down the other end away from the guy. So he kept sliding his chair away from the guy and pressing the pedal and then sliding back in front of him. Okay, this is mental, you know. And then he'd print something off, so he'd have to get up to the printer. And it was all over the place. And it was really interesting.
Not good for building rapport.
No good for building rapport. Yeah. Just really good for breaking rapport every three. And then he never asked him about, you know, like, oh, 10-pin bowling, that's interesting, you know. What do you do? Are you a champion? How often do you play? Nothing. Even though he got this jacket with 10-pin bowling, I've never seen anybody since wear a 10-pin bowling jacket. So it was obviously important to him, you know. Mm. So there was things like that, and then it was kind of like, how do they think about success, and how are they representing that in the mind? Now I can't remember how the woman represented success, but he said, He had this image of himself with his young son in a swimming pool, you know, the public swimming pool. And I don't know, I can't remember the details of it, but I said to him, I said, well, you know, when you think about that picture, I said, is it in colour or black and white? And he went, black and white. And I went, oh, okay. I said, what happens if you turn to colour? And his face just lit up and he went, oh my God. And I went, what? And he goes, well, it's like before it was like, well, this is what it would be like if I was successful. Yeah. And when I turned it to colour, it's like, I am successful. And it was like the simplest thing, and it had this major, major impact on him. He didn't realise he was making black and white images. When you think of black and white images, they're not real, are they? Life isn't black and white.
This has taken a turn I wasn't expecting. So
it's taken a turn I wasn't expecting either. What were we going to do? I've forgotten now.
How to create a breakthrough state. But I think it ties in, like, we were talking about the woman who is a successful person, like giving people, understanding people, creating rapport, understanding people. And like, she was doing everything right, really.
She was doing everything
so
right.
So she didn't need to create a breakthrough state because she was already sorted.
She didn't really. She had a phenomenal memory, and I was like, hey, you know, like we can all remember. Well, most of us can remember people when we see them in the same context, right?
Yes.
But sometimes, if we see people out of context, we might recognise the face, but they go, "Oh, I know that person from somewhere," and not be able to remember.
Yeah.
But she could remember people out of context, and she would not only remember them out of context, she'd remember the name, but she'd also remember things about their banking history or something like that. So she might meet somebody, like she was in one of the branches in I won't say where it was, but it was between here and Auckland, right? And people were coming from Auckland to see her because she was so good. And, you know, like one guy came in and he said, oh, he said, I've come to pay off the loan. And she says, wow, she says, you must have sold a lot of guitar lessons. He was like blown away that she remembered because it had been like 8 months since he'd been in. And she, obviously, it's not the only client that she's got, you know.
She sounds like a bit of a high bar to try to reach for everybody else.
But what I was interested in is how did she remember people? Because, you know, nobody else could. I've never seen anybody with such a phenomenal memory. So she said, oh, I don't know, my dad's the same. It's like it's inherited, right? Well, it's not inherited, right? So what I found out for her was that when she had a client in front of her, she would make a colour picture of that person with the paperwork associated with whatever she'd been talking to him about. And then when she saw the person again, this same image would flash into her mind with all the information. So, you know, she might see somebody and say, oh, how are you going saving for your boat? And again, I'd be like, oh, that person really cares. Well, she did really care anyway, and that's probably why she could remember these things.
So she made a colour picture in her mind.
In her mind. Yeah. So she made a picture in her mind at the time, which, again, these are things she wasn't aware of doing. It was like this is what the modelling thing is, to find out how she's doing what she's doing. So she's doing like what you were doing then, looking up and making a picture.
She was probably... I can't think.
Sorry. Look up again.
She probably wasn't aware that she probably thought everyone did that.
No, she didn't know she was doing it.
She didn't even know she was doing it. Oh, really?
No.
So that's, see, a lot of people, especially as I get older, like, you know, and I said this morning I'm tired, like, the effort of remembering stuff, it seems like I need to save my energy for other things.
Because you've only got 86 billion brain cells.
Yeah, well, so few. But it's that thing of getting older and changing. Change is harder because you've got habits that have built. You can't just. So how do I mean? Did you get round to training the other staff to do these things?
Oh yeah, there's a few things I told him.
I imagine the younger staff would lap it up, and the older ones less so.
Well, actually, I didn't, because what happened is they wanted me to do this project to figure out why this woman was particularly brilliant, basically, and they just picked anybody that was average, and so it happened to be a guy in another branch. I said to him, you know, do you realise every time you move your chair backwards and forwards, you're breaking rapport, and what rapport actually was, you know? And he didn't. He didn't have a clue, and so then he changed everything around, so the computer was on the end where the client was going to sit, and then he, you know, to notice what pictures he's making and turn them to colour, so they seem more realistic than black and white pictures, you know. But what they wanted at the end was to know, you know, was there any changes that I should make to the bonus, out of the bonus scheme and that. And I said, and my recommendation was a stop paying people to sell products and pay people to build relationships, because that's all she was doing, the one that was brilliant. She was building genuine relationships, genuinely wanting to do the best for people, what they needed. And, you know, that's how she did it. She never, ever focused on the bonus. It wasn't important to her. Not that she was, you know, rich or anything like that, but it was like she really wanted to do the best for the customer.
Yeah, in the moment when she's confronted with someone, that's what she's focused on.
Yeah.
Did the bank take your advice?
Surprise!
It was too far out of left field for them.
Well, it was quite a few years ago, and it was like, well, that's my recommendation.
These days, they might be more likely to.
Do you think?
I don't know. I've just been hopeful. Well, how would you keep closing
the branches down so you can't see anybody?
Well, that's the easy way around it. Yeah. Then you don't need staff, and you don't have to pay bonuses. How would you have got someone to take on to change the way they do this? Like that guy, some simple things were really easy for him, but the change from focusing on the bonus to focusing on the person and their needs instead of their wants.
Oh well, I didn't, because that wasn't part of the brief that I had.
But how would you?
Oh, how would I? So talking about, giving you the example of the guy that was temping bowling, be like, okay, so exploring other options. So for a start off, I'd talk to him about temping bowling, you know, and like, well, how often do you go temping bowling? Well, it sounded like he was going to go, I mean, he's just offering this information, he was going to go every weekend or most weekends somewhere or another to do this temping bowling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, oh, okay, and how much does that cost? You know, how much do you spend? You think, well, you're away, you know, well, it'd be petrol and food and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I'd be making notes of that.
Sounds like he didn't have a proper budget for his week.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, that's what the banking consultant should have been doing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, he should have immediately been going, oh, we need to work out a budget to see if this works.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't do that, though, you know.
He just was like, here's a guy wanting a loan, I give him a loan, done.
Because he wanted to please the customer. He wanted to give them what they wanted.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one, she gave them what they needed. So, and as an example, she'd set this woman up with a savings account 2 years before. So that was probably when she was pregnant, thinking about it now, because the kid was about two, you know.
It's a good time to forget things.
Yeah, yeah. And so she was probably, you know, working and all that kind of stuff. So I set it up now, and then when she needs it, it's there. So she was thinking about the client and about the future and what she might need, you know.
Yeah, how do you change everyone in the business to be like that?
Well, they weren't interested, were they?
No. But that's like that's about that's actually about changing.
It's about relationships.
It's about changing them as people, though, to what they're focused on. Like, you're getting into values, aren't you, and stuff
you're
like
getting
that.
Getting into values, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because the branch manager of she was in charge of both branches had actually done my practitioner course and master practitioner, and there's a thing we do called a values elicitation, which is finding out what people's values are in a particular context. So you could do the context of relationships. So what's important to you in a relationship? Because, you know, people get in a relationship and then, you know, down the track they go, oh, I don't think we really agree on some things because they haven't determined what their values are. Or they go, things aren't going quite right, you know, and then we split up because they're not the same. Or you could do values in work. You could do values in raising families. You know, because often people have got their own ideas.
Yeah, that's an important one for young couples, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They don't find out.
Exactly.
Till it's
too
late.
What are you doing? Well, I'm doing the way I was brought up or the opposite of how I was brought up, but there's not necessarily a consultation about how it's going to go, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, we usually do a values elicitation. It takes a long time. It takes probably at least 2 hours to do a values elicitation, and because people will know generally what the words are, so they might say, oh, well, you know, like if it was work, it might be, well, you know, I need autonomy, so that's a key word, you know, or I need flexibility, or I need openness, I need a good team leader, you know, so they'll come up with a word or a couple of words for the label for the values, right? Yeah. But those are just labels that they don't really mean that much, because we can talk about flexibility. So say, okay, flexibility is important, right? Well, what's flexibility? So for me, it means if I want to work until 1 o'clock in the morning, I can. And if I want to come in for an interview on Monday morning with you, I can do that, right? But that might not work if I was working for a company and they go, well, you can't work till 1 because we close the doors at 5 o'clock, you know.
Yeah.
And we expect you to be here at 8 or 8:30. And, you know, you can have flexibility for lunch. You can go between, you know, for half an hour anywhere between 12 and 2, as long as you organise it with everybody else, right? Well, that's not really that flexible for me, right?
Yeah.
So my idea of flexibility and somebody else's are going to be completely different. But we talk about it as if we mean the same thing. So the idea then is you figure out what somebody's values are. So you start with the key words. So say it's flexible. So then you say, well, you know, what does flexibility mean to you? And you get list or write it all down, what they say flexibility means to them. And then how do they know when they have flexibility? What do they see and hear and feel that tells them that they have flexibility?
Okay, right. And so it is quite detailed. Yeah,
and then why is it important? So they might say, well, because, you know, I like to be, if it's flexible, I like to be my own person and fitting with my time frame. Okay, and then you go, okay, and why is that important? And then when the answer for that one, you go, okay, and why is that important? So you're getting deeper and deeper into where the values come from.
This is good. I sometimes hear people talk, and I don't want to get into this particular one, but I hear people talk about standards, that standards are important. Right. And I'm like, I don't know what it means. Well, I don't know what they mean by it.
That's why.
Yeah, I'm really confused. Eh? Like genuinely confused and frustrated. But so anyways, all right. So you'd have to do all that.
So you do that.
To get to the bottom of how to get. Yeah. Can you change people's values at that point?
Well, can you just to go back to what I was saying? So this is how you do it. So it takes a while. It takes a couple of hours because values are something that are generally, unless you've done a lot of stuff with values, they're just outside conscious awareness. So one of the ways that you realise what a value is if somebody violates one of them, you get really angry about it, right?
Yeah.
Because somebody's and then you go, oh, okay, well, that's obviously really important to me. So then you realise. So to do the values elicitation, you've got to write it down as well, but also it takes a lot of thinking. It's like people are delving into the depths of the soul and figuring out what it is and then putting words to it, you know. And so this woman that was the branch manager of these two branches, she said her colleagues in the other branches had said to her, you know, why do you – because she would do a values elicitation with – if she was recruiting the last two people on the shortlist. So she'd get a shortlist of people and then she'd go, I'm going to do a values elicitation with both of these people.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And so then she would know what motivates them because we're motivated by our values. So she'd know how to motivate them. She would also be able to question if they did things that were in contravention of their own values, which is then calling into question their integrity. Rather than saying, you know, why did you do this? It's like, well, you know, you said this, but then I noticed you did that. Could you explain that? And then, so it's keeping people honest in terms of their values and integrity, right? And so she'd do that, and then she'd pick the person whose values most closely match those of the bank and the branch and the team that was already there.
Yeah, okay.
And so her colleagues used to say to her, why do you do that? It takes ages. It takes, you know, like, what, 5 or 6 hours? And she'd go, well, how long does it take to get rid of somebody that doesn't fit?
Yeah.
You know, it's like months, years.
Yeah,
never.
It's a long process. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If they're not actually doing anything wrong.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. And it was kind of like, and they were like, oh, okay, you know, makes sense because, and, you know, it's not a good fit then for either the person that's applying for the job or for the people that already work there. That can, you know, disrupt everything.
So you don't actually try and change the values of the staff you've got. You try and get staff with the values you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you at the very least explain the values? So back to this example of the customer service person who gave people what they needed versus the guy who gave them what they wanted. Mm. Could you talk to all of them about like these are the values that we want and this is why we want to do it. So at least they can see that's important.
Well, you could do. I mean, the branch had values. I can't remember what they were now. But they weren't very explicit. They were just like a couple of words, you know. And so,
which we've just discussed.
Open to interpretation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But then if you got somebody that had, say, 7 out of 8 values were the same as the banks, and you go, well, okay, well, this one, I need to explain to you this is how we work. So that in a situation then, what it means is if people understand, like, the company values, they can make decisions. They'll go, well, which decision out of this one or this one, which fits with the company values better? Well, it's this one. It's pretty obvious, you're not right.
Yeah.
Whereas if they don't have that, then they've always got to go to somebody else for a decision. So it gives people the autonomy to make decisions based on the values of the company.
That'll be why people don't understand how the decisions made by people higher up than them.
No.
If the values aren't the same, they'll be like, I just don't understand
why
they're doing
that. Well, they might not be using the company values. They might be using their own or some other, you know, method of making a decision.